Okay, I'm going to shift gears and talk about quite a different topic. Just as a little bit of background, I'm a cardiologist who runs the large, or for many years ran the large animal physiology laboratories at Yale. Been collaborating with Jim Duncan and his group for many years. And recently, we've been moving into the area of target molecular imaging. And so what I'm going to show is our work with multimodality, non-invasive imaging in the evaluation of post-MI elder remodeling. And what I hope to do is really integrate or show you an example where there's an integration of molecular, physiological, mechanical information, and that this information can be derived from multiple non-invasive imaging sources. And I'm going to use the problem or the issue of post-MI elder remodeling as an example. And there's an important, and I'm going to look at the interplay between regional mechanics and biological events in the setting of elder remodeling, and talk about the role of targeted imaging, the matrix metalloproteinases, and the role of targeted imaging of integrins very briefly. And sort of the theme of this talk is translating cellular events to integrated processes in small animals and large animals and ultimately in patients. And so I want to do a little bit of a clinical setup here on elder remodeling, which refers to the changes in the structure, geometry, and eventually function of left ventricle that occur following MI. And it's been shown that elder remodeling is an important independent risk factor in patients following myocardial infarction. So just as an explanation, a little bit about what remodeling refers to. So we have an occluded coronary artery. It results in an initial myocardial infarct. That infarct may extend. The dysfunction associated with that infarct places the remote areas at a mechanical disadvantage, and they hypertrophy, and the whole heart dilates and enlarges and results in this adverse global LV remodeling. Now, the process of remodeling is a complicated process that involves a lot of cellular events. Initially, there's the influx of inflammatory cells and the release of pro-inflammatory cytokines, and then there is activation release of a host of enzymes, including the matrix metalloproteinases, or MNPs. And there is a balance between these enzymes and inhibitors of these enzymes, which are called TIMPs. And these, the activation of this enzyme system results in some degradation of the extracellular matrix and alteration of the cardiac structure. So what are the important cellular components involved in this process? Well, the extracellular matrix, which provides the support structure for mechanical function, and it's actually a depot for a lot of signaling molecules, cytokines and growth factors. One of the players are integrins, which modulate the communication between the extracellular matrix and this intracellular cascade of events. And then there are the matrix metalloproteinases, or MMPs, which regulate the matrix turnover. And what are these enzymes? Well, they're a family of zinc-containing enzymes that are secreted initially as proenzymes, and then they're activated by other enzymes, proteases, or they can be mechanotransduced. And so one of the things I want to kind of talk about is the activation of these enzymes by mechanical stretch. As I said, they're regulated by these inhibitors, or TIMPs. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to radio label an MMP inhibitor in order to evaluate in vivo MMP activation. Now, there are a whole host of these MMPs, and they can be grouped into some broad classes, collagenases, gelatinases, stromalysins, and these are secreted MMPs, and then there are also membrane-bound MMPs, and they have a whole host of different substrates, and they're classified by a whole host of different numbers. And what happens as these enzymes, these MMPs are activated, is they disrupt the matrix, the sort of the connection between the myocardial bundles, and that leads to some sliding. Shown here is the histologic from a histologic section from a normal heart and an infarcted heart. And you can see in this Masson's trichrome stain, all this blue is all fibrous tissue within the infarct. And so then these MMPs degrade this matrix and modulate the collagen level in the heart. And that the MMP activation results in this increased fibrosis. And as was discussed, if you dissolve the cells, what you're left with is this kind of honeycomb appearance of the extracellular matrix, which provides support geometric shape, and also coordinates sort of contraction of the myocytes in between. And just to illustrate sort of what are the importance of this support structure, this is a figure that I borrowed from Frank Spinelli, who I closely collaborate with. Here's a baseball stadium in which if you disrupt key support structures in this structure, what happens is that you destroy your operating functional organism, which in this case, or organ, which would be the heart. So I'm going to now provide some clinical evidence that illustrates the importance of MMPs in this process, and then I'm going to give some experimental data that supports this, and then I'm going to talk about our data evaluating these processes. So first, some clinical evidence. As I said, this process of LV remodeling is an important independent determinant of post-MI survival. So just, we talked about ejection fraction. Well, another index is end-diastolic volume. And shown here is the survival curves in months following myocardial infarction, whether the end-diastolic volume was large or small. And you can see that those patients that have a large initial end-diastolic volume have a much worse prognosis. Shown here is another sub-study of a randomized study looking at, this is the RALS trial, where we're looking at spironolactone, which alters aldosterone. And what they did in this study is they segregated patients based on the release of circulating procollagen fragments. So as the matrix is turned over, procollagen is cleaved to collagen, and there's a release of these fragments into the circulation. And the idea is that if there's more turnover of the matrix, there's going to be more circulating indices. And what they showed here is that in these patients, this was the placebo limb, so these patients didn't get a therapeutic intervention. They were just followed over time. And the ones that had more of these procollagen fragments in their circulation had a worse outcome. Now, what this suggests is that some even blood marker provides some index of outcome in patients. What we'd like to do is develop an in vivo imaging index that would provide a more specific index of activation or turnover of the matrix within the heart, because these collagen would also be activated in the setting of arthritis or other inflammatory processes, and we want to know what's going on in the heart specifically. Here's some additional data from this sub-study of this RALS trial, where they looked at, this is in the placebo limb and the treatment limb. And so as I said, the ones, and this is mortality, the ones that had more turnover had a higher mortality. But the important thing is that the ones that had more turnover that were treated actually did better, and the ones that had less turnover and were treated didn't have a benefit. So not only could we use the serum marker to predict who was going to do worse, but we could use the serum marker to predict who was going to respond to a therapeutic intervention. And what we'd like to do is take that again, as I said, one step further, where we're looking at imaging parameters. This just relates this index of collagen turnover to changes in function. So we're looking here over time at the release of these procollagen fragments in patients who had severe heart failure, mild heart failure, no heart failure. And the ones that had heart failure are the ones that had higher circulating levels of this index. And one also could look at indices of global function as well. Here is, again, relating this index of collagen turnover post-MI with mechanical function. And shown here is the EF in controls, and then the EF in patients post-infarct that had either low or high circulating levels. And if they had high circulating levels, there wasn't an improvement in function over time, where if they had low circulating levels of this collagen turnover, they improved their function following their myocardial infarct. And that this serum index was inversely related to the improvement in function following myocardial infarction. Now, what is the evidence in patients that MMPs are directly involved in LV remodeling? Well, this is a study, kind of an abstract that was presented by the group in South Carolina, where they again looked at patients following myocardial infarction, and they used standard criteria for defining myocardial infarction. And they also had a group of control subjects, and in these patients, they measured plasma levels of MMPs and TIMPs, and then they did serial echocardiography to demonstrate the changes in LV volume or the remodeling. And what you see here, these are age and gender-matched controls, and these are the changes in end-diastolic volume over days following myocardial infarction. And in the infarct patients, there's an increase in end-diastolic volume. They also showed that there was an increase in circulating levels of MMP9, and that they were able to show that the change in end-diastolic volume was related to the change in MMP9 that occurred in the early post-infarct period. And again, this is sort of a summary of that data, that when there was a small change between 6 hours and 5 days in MMP9, there was less change in end-diastolic volume, but when there was a greater change in that early period, that predicted dilatation. So now that was some of the clinical data. I'd like to review some of the experimental data. And there's some data that has actually tried to relate wall stress or strain to matrix remodeling or MMP activation. This just shows a plot of wall stress following myocardial infarction in sham-operated animals in the remote area of the border zone of the infarct. And what you can see is that in the infarct zone, there's higher wall stress and that there's also increase in the border zones. And then they related wall stress to MMP levels, and they measured circulating MMP, and they classified it to low levels or high levels, and the ones that had the higher levels had more wall stress. And they also, there is an association between the release of MMP9 and the presence of inflammatory cells, since MMP9 is released by inflammatory cells. And that other investigators have shown so co-localization, so this is a biopsy in a heart model post-infarct, and you can see MMP9 localization in areas of neutrophil infiltration. This is an interesting study that was published with regard to the relationship between myocardial stress and regional MMP9 activation. And this is a canine model in which the left ventricle was paced on the free wall of the epicardium. And they implanted sonomicrometers mid-wall so they could look at segmental shortening. And here is the remote site with atrial pacing and the remote site with pacing of the ventricle. And here is the site of pacing. And this just, what's shown here is segment length. So we're looking at the dotted line is the pressure curve, and the solid line is segmental shortening. So we're seeing wall shortening here as during systole. And that with atrial pacing, that the patterns are the same in the remote area and in the site of and in the setting of atrial pacing. However, when they did ventricular pacing from the epicardium, there was a change in the pattern of shortening, so that there was early or late diastolic shortening, but then there was a systolic lengthening and then a second shortening. So they changed the contraction pattern just by pacing the heart. And what they found was that within hours of this, 4 hours of pacing, there was activation of these MMP9, and that was done by gelatin zymography. So we're looking at the actual, we're looking at both total MMP9 plus the activated conform of MMP9. So as I said, MMPs are released in proform, and then a piece is cleaved, and then the short form is the activated form. So we're looking at a 92 kilodalton sized component and an 86 kilodalton sized component. So this is sort of the procollagen, and this is the activated form. And what you see is that in the remote areas with this epicardial pacing, there's no increase in MMPs, but in the paced area, there is a 40-fold increase in MMP activation within hours of this change in the mechanical contraction pattern. And it was both sort of forms of this MMP. And then went on in this study to look at, in the remote area and in the paced area, an index of collagen degradation, and they also looked at myeloperoxidase activity, which is an index of inflammation. And they showed, because they're trying to understand what were the events associated with this, and this alteration was associated with collagen turnover, and it was also associated with influx of inflammatory cells or activation of inflammatory cells. So that was evidence that sort of a change in vivo change in stretch or mechanics resulted in activation of these matrix metalloproteinases. Now the group headed by Frank Spinelli in South Carolina has looked at MMP activation in a whole host of experimental models. And this is a pig model where we're looking at 8 weeks post-MI, and they looked in the in remote areas, in the border zones, and in the center of the infarct. And shown here along this axis are all the different MMP categories. And you can see that there is a spatial distribution of these MMPs. So different MMPs are activated in different regions in the setting of myocardial infarction. And that occurs not only in the infarct, but also in the border zone and also in the remote zones. This is another study by that group looking at the relationship between MT1, tissue-bound MMP, and TIMP4 levels in relationship to end-systolic cord lengths. And they basically are showing that there is a relationship between mechanical function and activation of these MMPs, or an inverse relationship with the inhibitors of these MMPs. Now, what evidence is there that manipulating the matrix actually affects outcome? So here's a study where there's a pig model where they used an inhibitor of MMP. So, and this one is a broad spectrum of inhibitor that seems to spare somewhat MMP1 and MMP7. So they had animals that they created infarction, and they performed serial echocardiography, and then they had control animals, they had animals with infarction, and then they had animals with infarction that were treated post-infarct with an MMP inhibitor, and then they had animals that had infarction and were pre-treated with an MMP inhibitor. And what they did was then looked at the effect on collagen content, and they showed that, that first of all, the MMP inhibition decreased post-infarct remodeling was associated with increases in sort of collagen content. So what I've shown you is some that there are regional specific changes in MMPs and TIMPs that occur following MI, that MMP activation contributes to this progressive elder remodeling, and that there's a mechanistic relationship between elder remodeling and MMP activation in the setting of myocardial infarction, and that selective inhibition of MMPs can favorably influence the outcome in patients following myocardial infarction. There are already clinical trials that are underway where patients are being treated with these inhibitors. And the problem is we don't know how long, who we should treat, whether we should treat everyone, whether we should treat patients for a day, a week, a month, or forever. And we have no way to follow the therapy in these patients. So what we'd like to do is use targeted imaging to evaluate these kinds of novel therapies in patients. So we hypothesized that MMP activation occurs post-MI, is associated with LV remodeling, and that a radiolabeled inhibitor targeted at MMP activation could provide a novel way of in vivo tracking the changes in MMP activation, actually localized MMP activation. So we have a macrocyclic peptomimetic, which has a structure based similar to these pharmacological inhibitors of MMPs. They're broad spectrum, inhibit a whole range of MMPs. They, on in vitro assays, confirm that they have a specific interaction with MMPs in the setting of infarction. They bind to the catalytic domain, so they reflect activated MMPs, and therefore they provide an index of MMP activation. These compounds were provided to us by Bristol-Myers Squibb. This is an indium-labeled compound, this peptomimetic called RP782, and this is the business end, this is a linker, and this is the radial label. This is a racemic isomer of the compound, so this is our negative control. This compound shows in vitro specificity for binding to MMPs. This compound shows no in vitro specificity to MMPs. We used a mouse model of infarction, so we put a ligature around the anterior wall of the heart. That results in a large infarct, In order to cut these hearts, we fill them with dental molding material. And this is a heart post-infarct, 1 week post-infarct, cut from the base to the apex. And you can see a large infarct in this mouse. This is a control heart in comparison. So these infarcts create enormous injury and significant post-infarct remodel. So we have a group of control mice. We have mice that were surgically infarcted, and we looked at them 1 week initially post-infarct, and we looked at them with our targeted compound and a control compound, and then we confirmed things post-mortem. Shown here are in situ zymograms and immunofluorescence. And these were performed by our collaborators in South Carolina. And this is in a control heart, and this is in a heart 7 days post-infarct, and we can see activation of the MNPs in the infarct and in border zones. And shown here is immunofluorescence for MNP2 and 9. And we again, the MNP2 is shown in green and MNP9 is shown in red. And we can see that are both kind of co-localized here in the infarct area, but are also present in some of the border zones. Shown here is a microautoradiograph. So we take the 1 millimeter cross section of the heart, then we cut a 15 micron thick section, we lay it out on film, and this is the targeted compound showing uptake in the infarct area. This is our negative control compound showing no focal uptake in the infarct, and these are control hearts. And this is the summary of a whole group of experiments showing that we have a 3.5-fold increase in the uptake of this targeted compound in the infarct relative to the remote area. No increase in control animals, and the targeted compound shows no increase. We've gone on to look at this serially. So the importance of using this radiotracer imaging is that one can evaluate these MNP activation over time. And we again created infarct in mice. We injected this compound. Now we have a technetium label compound, which facilitates in vivo imaging. And we looked at the animals at 1, 2, and 3 weeks post-MI. And anytime you do this targeted imaging, you need some sort of reference in order to reconstruct these images in 3D, and we use a perfusion index as our way to find the heart, basically, and we used, in this case, thallium 201, injected, and this is a marker of perfusion and viability. So we have a perfusion tracer, and we have a targeted tracer that binds to MNPs, and then we did imaging and postmortem counting. These are in vivo images in a mouse, a sham-operated animal, and a mouse 1 week post-infarct, and a mouse 3 weeks post-infarct. And these images are acquired with a microspec CT imaging system. The CT system provides about 100 micron resolution, and the SPEC system provides about 1 millimeter resolution. This is the thallium perfusion, so we're looking at kind of a cross-section through the left ventricle. And if there's a normal heart, there should be a nice normal perfusion of the left ventricle. If there's an infarct, there should be decreased blood flow and decreased viability, and we see that in these two infarcted mouse hearts. Shown here, color-coded in red, is the uptake of the targeted compound to MNP. So now, in order to create the infarct in the mouse, we have to do a thoracotomy. And when we do a thoracotomy, we tie off we create the infarct, then we close the chest. But there's also wound healing over the chest. And so it's important that we do three-dimensional imaging so that we can separate the biological activity in the chest wall from what's going on in the heart. And so in the sham-operated animal, we see a little focal uptake of the MMP compound at the incision site. And 1 week post-infarct, we see uptake in the infarct zone, in the border zones, and in the incision site. And we see this at 3 weeks. So, and if we superimpose the images, you can see localization of the MNP targeted tracer within the infarct. So this allows us to look in vivo in these experimental models for regional activation of MNPs. Now obviously we want to relate this biological event to a mechanical event. Shown here is a series of cross-sectional images going from the base of the heart to the apex of the heart. In green is shown the thallium. And at the base, we have a uniform uptake. As you get towards the apex, there's a perfusion defect, and we see focal uptake of the MNP-targeted compound. And again, we see it in the chest wall over the site where we performed the ligature. shown here is a superimposed CT image in a mouse with the two targeted images. So we're looking at, in green, the thallium, in red, the MMP activation. And we can localize that with anatomic structures. Okay, so shown here is in these experimental animals, we have a control animals, animals are 1, 2, and 3 weeks post-infarct, and we cut up the hearts into pieces, and then we count the activity in those pieces for both the perfusion tracer and for the targeted tracer that maps the MMP activation. And we can see that there's a 60 to 70% reduction in flow based on thallium at 1, 2, and 3 weeks. And we can see that there is a relative increase in the uptake of the targeted compound, and it's about a four-fold increase, and that persists at 1, 2, and 3 weeks. Suggests that there's early activation of these enzymes and that there's persistent activation of these enzymes for several weeks. Now, as I discussed, infarction or remodeling is not just a process that occurs in the infarct region, but it also occurs in the remote area because the infarct places the remote areas at a mechanical disadvantage. And so in order to evaluate the uptake in these remote areas, we need some other way to express the uptake of this compound. So we express it as a percent injected dose. And so what we demonstrated was that in control animals, are shown here the uptake percent injected dose. Shown here is the infarcted animals in the infarct area and the remote area. So while in the infarct area there's a fivefold increase in the uptake, in the remote areas there's a twofold increase in the uptake, demonstrating that the MMPs are activated not only in the infarct but also remotely. Now, as you'll see, what we want to do is relate these biological events to regional mechanical events. We've moved this into some larger animal models. Shown here are some in vivo images in a dog 24 hours post-infarct. Now, one of the things to avoid this inflammation in the chest wall, now in the larger animals, we create the infarct by an angioplasty balloon catheter. So we place a balloon catheter in the proximal coronary artery. We inflate that for a variable period of time. In order to create transmural infarcts, what we do is we occlude for 6 hours, and then during the occlusion, we pace the animals at a heart rate of 160 or 180 to increase the demand so that we get a transmural injury to promote infarct remodeling. Shown here is an in vivo perfusion image, and if you're not familiar with this, you're looking at sort of the uptake of the perfusion tracer in the left ventricle. And as you go from the base down to the apex, you can see decreased perfusion in the anterior wall. The targeted tracer that binds to the activated MMP is activated in the border zones of this infarct. If you look at the long axis, we're looking at the septum, the apex, and the lateral wall, and again, we see activation in the area of the injury. Now, this is in another animal 1 week post a circumflex infarct. So this infarct actually creates a perfusion defect in the posterior wall, or the posterior septal wall. And again, we see a perfusion defect, and we see activation here. It's probably easier to see in this view. Here's the anterior wall, the apex, the inferior wall. Here's activation in the inferior wall. So these are in vivo images targeting MMP activation. We can then cut out the hearts and image them in a gamma camera on the surface of a detector, and we image in two different windows. So the perfusion tracer emits at one energy, and the targeted tracer emits at another energy. So we acquire two images in two different energy windows, and then we superimpose them. And what we see is normal perfusion, decreased perfusion, and activation of the MMPs, which are color-coded in red. So now here is an LED infarct with an anterior infarct. Here's a circumflex infarct, a posterior infarct. This is at 1 day. This is at 1 week. What we've demonstrated, at least in this preliminary data, is that early on, there's activation in the borders of the infarct, perhaps because of changes in strain or changes in stress. And then later on, we see activation throughout the infarct. There's also the issue of delivery, so we have to be concerned about getting the tracer to these areas. Now, what we'd like to do, and this gets to more of the issue of modeling. I know you guys are wondering, when are we going to talk about some modeling here? So we're doing in vivo imaging of MMP activation, and we want to relate that to abnormal strain patterns. And we want to know whether or not the signature of MMP activation and strain are predictive of outcome in these experimental models or in patients. So we perform serial SPECT CT imaging with these targeted tracers, and then we perform serial MR imaging in order to look at regional strain. So this is the protocol. This is in a group of pigs. We have we have control pigs, and we have pigs that we have evaluated at 1, 2, and 4 weeks post-infarct. The first thing that happens is that they get an MR image, and then within a couple of hours, they're injected with a radio tracer. We wait 90 minutes, wait for the blood to clear, and then we get an in vivo image, and we do SPECT CT. The CT allows anatomic registration and also allows us to do partial volume and attenuation correction so we can get absolute uptake of these compounds. Then we inject a perfusion tracer, we repeat the imaging, and then we cut out the hearts. We used a GE Hawkeye system, this hybrid SPECT CT imaging system. This is the doses we injected. We do standard three-dimensional reconstruction with CT attenuation correction. This is the MR imaging, and this has evolved. We've used different sequences at different time points as the sequences have evolved. And we've looked at regional displacements using this novel shape tracking algorithm that Jim Duncan and his group has developed over the years and have evolved over the years. And this approach incorporates a mechanical model and also a finite element analysis to calculate both cardiac specific and fiber specific strains. This just illustrates our histologic analysis. We can kind of skip through this. I'm going to show you some of the in vivo SPECT images, and I'm going to show you some of the strain data. So these are in vivo images and a control animal and an animal at 1, 2, or 4 weeks post-MI. These are all surgically, in this case, we've surgically infarcted the pigs, do a thoracotomy, and tie off two marginal branches to create a lateral wall infarct. So we end up with a posterior lateral perfusion defect, which we can see in all the images. These are the in vivo targeted images, which show focal uptake of the MMP in the area of the infarct. And we can track over time the uptake. These are the ex vivo images. Again, thallium is shown in green. The targeted tracer is shown in red. And these are the histologic sections. So this is the infarct here in the posterior lateral wall. And this is the activation of the MMP in the area of decreased blood flow. We then take each of these slices and cut them into 16 radial pies and then count each of the radioactivity in each of the pies and display them as a count profile. So here is the thallium perfusion. So this is going in a counterclockwise direction from the anterior wall to the septum to the inferior wall to the lateral wall. And you can see that there, as you go around, there's decrease in thallium perfusion. And as you go around, there's an increase in activation of the MMP-targeted compound. And shown here is the summary data from these animals. And again, we have control animals, and then we have animals at 1, 2, and 3 weeks, at 2 and 4 weeks post-infarct. And we counted the activity in the infarct region, the border zone, and the remote zone. And we show, again, a fourfold increase in the enzyme in the infarct zone, a lesser increase in the border zone, and some increase remotely, although in these animals we didn't see a statistically significant increase. Now, shown here is an example of the CMR images in one of the animals going images. These are short axis images, as you've seen earlier today, going from apex up to the base. Focus in at these slices at the base, and you can see as the heart contracts, this area of the infarct remains thin and actually bulges, and that area of dysfunction extends from the base of the heart all the way down towards the apex of the heart. Now, I'm going to just briefly talk about this approach to calculate strain. Jim Duncan, later in the meeting, is going to go through this in tremendous detail, how the algorithm works. Shown here is just an assembled 3D data set from the MR. We semi-automatically render the endocardial surface and the epicardial surface, and then we track points on the surface based on their energy of curvature, and then take those displacements, which are derived from somewhat noisy images, and constrain or calculate strains based on these displacements using a finite element analysis and some mechanical models of the myocardium. This just illustrates the shape tracking approach. So you have an image at end diastole, and then you have images at subsequent time points. We find a surface patch, and we try to register that surface patch with the next time frame and find the most likely fit or trajectory for displacement of thousands of points on the surface of the heart. And then we embed this in the mechanical model, which is a transversely isotropic linear elastic model, which takes into account the fiber architecture based on, as defined by investigators that are at this meeting. Normally, as you know, the heart fibers course obliquely in the epicardium, and then as they go in mid-wall, they become more circumferential, and then in the inner wall, they go oblique the other direction. And in the model, we constrain the data by saying that the myocardium is stiffer, 3.5-fold more stiff in the fiber direction than the cross-fiber direction, and that there is a relative incompressibility of the tissue. And when we compute the strains, we can express those strains in cardiac-specific axes, or we can express those strains in fiber-specific axes. And shown here is an example of the strain maps that we can generate. And I'm going to show you several of these maps. And the way it works is that lengthening in a given direction is color-coded yellow and red, and shortening is color-coded greens and blue. And shown here is a cross-section of the left ventricle looking from the base down to the apex. And this is in a normal heart in a dog. And this is radial strain, this is circumferential strain, this is longitudinal strain. And what we've observed is that there's more thickening or deformation in the inner wall than the outer wall. And that's pretty uniform. And as the wall thickens more in the inner wall, there's also more shortening. And there's the epicardial to endocardial gradient that we can define by this approach. Now, interestingly, if we translate these deformations into fiber-specific axes, and again, this is based on a model of a fiber architecture, we find that the fiber deformations is pretty uniform, so that while the inner wall deforms more than the outer wall, the fibers are shortening the same degree. So then why does that happen? There's more deformation in the cross-fiber direction, and that's what's illustrated here. And these are the types of strain maps that we get in this is radial strain, circumferential strain, longitudinal strain. And again, normal thickening would be red and yellow, and thinning or bulging in the infarct area would be shown as green. We see decreased circumferential strain and then these longitudinal strains. We also can compute radial circumferential shear, circumferential longitudinal shear, and radial longitudinal shear. And what we're looking to see if there is an association in the spatial distribution of these regional strains or shears and regional activation of MMPs. This just shows a dynamic image, radial strain, circumferential strain, longitudinal strain in an animal 1 week post-infarct. And we can see systolic bulging here and radial thickening here. And the goal is to relate this to MMP activation. So this is an ex vivo image. Green is thallium perfusion. Red is activation of the MMP. This is the histologic section showing a thinned infarct. And this is the strain map in vivo. So we want to relate regional MMP activation to regional strain. And we can do that for many slices in the heart. So if we cut the heart into 8 or 10, in this case 9, short axis slices, and we plot radial strain around the circumference, you can see at the base it's pretty uniform, thickening of about 20 to 40%. But as you get towards the apex in these animals with a posterior infarct, there is actually it's the other way around. This would be at the base of the heart. There is bulging, or actually here's no thickening. So this would be akinesis, this would be dyskinesis. And we see in the posterior wall an area of dyskinesis. We can map out regional activation of MMPs, and we can plot radial strain versus MMP activation, and we can do it for remote segments, border segments, or infarcted segments. And shown here is our initial analysis in a subset of the animals. These are animals 1 week post-infarct, and shown here is again radial strain, and shown here is uptake of the MMP-targeted compound. And the thing to note is that if you're looking at radial strain, we have decreased strain in the infarct area and the border zones, and you can't really distinguish them. The strains, while there's a trend to be different, they're not statistically different. However, if we look at MMP activation, we see, at least initially, no activation in the border zones, but we see MMP activation in the infarct. And we think that over time, that that pattern will change. And we think that the combination of looking at regional strain and regional MMP activation will facilitate our characterizing these patients or and predicting their outcome. Now, one of the things in our model, we assume a certain fiber architecture. But in the infarct, that fiber architecture may be disrupted. What we'd like to do is use perhaps the targeted images as a way to define an area where different material properties might be applied, because we know the matrix is probably different in those areas because there's been activation of these MMPs and disruption of the matrix. So the idea is perhaps to use multimodality imaging in order to have one targeted biological image constrain the analysis of the mechanical analysis. So just to summarize these PIC data, we see increased MMP activity non-invasively with this MMP targeted tracer. We observed activation at 1 week, although it remains elevated at 2 and 4 weeks. That was 4 or 5-fold increase in the central infarct, but there was, and that this correlated with regional strains. We've also demonstrated that hybrid imaging allows the serial monitoring of spatial temporal changes in MMP activation, and it may provide a novel approach for actually tracking therapeutic interventions like post-MMP inhibition. So now we've used an assumed model of fiber architecture. What we'd like to do is actually use a real map of the fiber architecture in a given animal. And unfortunately, we're using an approach called diffusion tensor imaging, which will be discussed in great length later in the meeting, which is an MRI modality that's sensitive to random movement of water molecules. And when this movement is hindered by membranes and macromolecules, the diffusion becomes anisotropic. And that in highly structured tissues, such as muscle fibers, this anisotropy can actually be used to characterize local tissue structure, and that these diffusion tensor eigenvectors have been shown to correlate with fiber architecture. Shown here is some work done by Marcel Jarkowski in the image analysis group, looking at, these are DTI images from a postmortem heart, and he has them color-coded by their fiber angle. You can see that in general, the midwall, the fibers are going in a circumferential direction, where in the outer and the inner wall, they go oblique. And if we look at a cross-section through here, we can see sort of the fiber direction changing from oblique one direction to circumferential in the midwall to oblique in the other direction. And if one seeds or does fiber connectivity, and selectively chooses fibers from the inner wall or the mid wall or the outer wall, one can assemble the general pattern of these fibers, in this case in the endocardium, in the mid wall, and in the epicardium. And you can see that the mid wall fibers tend to be circumferential and the inner wall and the outer wall tend to be oblique. Now, it's been shown that if one looks at the primary eigenvector, relates to a fiber architecture, fiber direction, but the secondary and tertiary eigenvectors reflect more of a composite sheet architecture. And these fibers are assembled in these sheets that tend to cross from the epicardium to the endocardium. And what Marcel has been able to do is actually map out some of these sheet changes in sheet angle as one marches across the wall. In this case, we're going to go from the lateral wall to the septum. And he has put crosshatches for the second and tertiary eigenvectors, which should sort of define this, primary and secondary eigenvectors, which should define the sheet planes. And then the sheet angle is defined by the sheet normal, eigenvector or the tertiary eigenvector. And these are the types of sheet connectivity that have been observed in these normal hearts. And the interesting thing is that there tends to be, in the middle of the ventricle, kind of more horizontal sheets, but at the base and at the apex, they tend to go more vertically. And I wonder whether or not sort of post-infarct remodeling, we know the heart becomes more globular, whether some of that's related to changes in this sheet architecture. Okay, I wanted to just touch on another aspect that we're doing in the lab, and that is looking at post-infarct remodeling. One component is the activation of the matrix. The other component is the repair of the vasculature within following myocardial infarction. And we've been using another technetium label compound that's targeted at the alpha V beta 3 integrin. The alpha V beta 3 integrin is expressed on activated endothelial cells. One of the concerns is that if you inhibit MMPs, that you might also inhibit angiogenesis, because the first step in angiogenesis, the formation of new blood vessels following ischemic injury, is you have to degrade the matrix in order to have the endothelial cells proliferate and migrate to form buds. And so the concern was that if you inhibited MMPs, that you'd actually inhibit angiogenesis. So in collaboration with a group at the Medical University of South Carolina, we explored wild-type mice and mice that had MMP9 knocked out. And shown here are, again, micro-CT images, micro-SPECT images of perfusion, micro-SPECT images of alpha-V beta-3 activation and then fusion. So this is a basal slice, this is an apical slice, this is the perfusion defect in an animal, in a wild-type animal 7 days post-infarct, and this is a MMP9 mouse knocked out 7 days post-infarct, and we can see activation of the alpha-V beta-3 again in the infarct area, again in the surgical wound. And then when we examined a whole host of these animals, we found that, again, the control animals had a 2.5-3-fold increase in actually the activation of this marker of angiogenesis, and that it was greater in the most ischemic areas. So we segregated all the pieces in the heart into normal flow regions, mildly reduced flow regions, moderately reduced flow regions, and severely reduced flow regions. And in the infarcted regions with reduced flow, the normal animals had a 2.5-fold increase in the uptake of this compound, but the knockouts actually had a 4-fold increase. So in fact, we observed increased angiogenesis in the setting of MMP9 knockout. So rather than impairing angiogenesis, we actually were able to observe an increase in angiogenesis. Now, we've also been using this approach to look at targeted gene therapy. This is a study we performed in collaboration with a group at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, where they're infarcting rats, and then at the time of the infarct, they inject a viral vector that induces insulin-like growth factor, which stimulates angiogenesis. And what they've observed is that there is increased angiogenesis in these transfected hearts, and there's less post-infarct remodeling. And shown here is the relationship between thallium uptake and the uptake of our targeted compound, the marker of angiogenesis. So we can actually demonstrate non-invasively the time-dependent changes in angiogenesis. And what we're able to do is track how these therapies, these gene therapies, stimulate angiogenesis and for how long angiogenesis is stimulated. This just shows we're extending this work now into a large animal model, and we're conducting a large series of infarcted animals where we're looking at angiogenesis over time and relating that to mechanical function assessed by MR imaging. We're also translating the work we did with 3D MR to 3D echo. So these animals get 3D echo, they get 3D MR, and they get targeted imaging with this alpha V beta 3 targeted tracer. So just to summarize, I think that what we need to think about in the future is integrated molecular imaging. We need to combine imaging of MMP-activated markers with perhaps markers of apoptosis or markers of angiogenesis, and we need to relate those with changes in regional and global mechanics, And this should provide a better and more comprehensive understanding of the pathophysiologic processes that occur following myocardial infarction. And we think that this multimodality assessment will allow risk stratification of patients and the evaluation of novel medical therapies or gene therapies in prevention of post-infarct remodeling. Now, where are we going with this work? And this is where I think people need to think about how they could apply some of this targeted molecular imaging to some of the mechanical modeling that's going on. We're obviously going to continue to look at these transgenic animals to understand which MMPs are activated and when. We're going to develop and evaluate more selective MMP targeted tracers. We're developing quantitative approaches to determine absolute uptake, and that can only happen with multimodality imaging, with anatomical information that allows us to correct for attenuation and also partial volume effects. We want to relate these changes to perfusion and changes in regional mechanics. We want to ultimately incorporate fiber and sheet architecture in our analysis of strain. And we want to use the radio tracers possibly as a way to impose constraints on our mechanical models. And none of this work would be possible without a large group of investigators, the people in my laboratory, our collaborators at the VA, our collaborators in pathology, our industrial collaborators, and Jim Duncan and his group, as well as investigators in the Medical University of South Carolina. Thanks.